This is podcast number 85 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and I belong to Jesus Christ. If you've hung around me very much, you know that I don't separate spiritual from temporal learning. Inspiration is a vital part of the pattern for learning, or as is said in Charlotte Mason's writings, true education is between a child's soul and God. While I respect people of all faiths, I myself am a Christian and believe that Jesus Christ is the source of all truth and light. In our secularized world, I frequently field questions from moms who are worried about how to nurture faith in their children. And that is what I'd like to address in this podcast. To open up the conversation, I'd like to turn to a hero of mine, a great soul who never fails to inspire my heart to do hard things and to trust in God. Her name is Gladys Aylward. She was a little woman. She didn't even reach 5 feet tall. Growing up, she found church to be quite boring and didn't have much use for religion. In fact, she aspired to be an actress. Then, one day, she tasted that love and connection to Jesus Christ that can't be explained in words. Around the same time, she learned that the people of China did not know him, and she couldn't bear the thought that there was a people out there who had never tasted of his love that she had felt. Her missionary society deemed that she was too stupid to learn the language and would not offer their support in a Chinese mission. So after saving every penny she could for a one-way train ticket to a remote village in China, she set off with nothing but $10 in her pocket and a firm faith and trust in God to supply the rest. And oh, what miracles they accomplished together. I've listed a few books in the library about her. A personal favorite is the one she wrote with Christine Hunter called Gladys Aylward, The Little Women. I promise you will never forget her. I don't want to take away from what you'll read, but let me highlight a couple of experiences to go with the topic of conversation in this podcast. At the time the Japanese invaded China, the people in her village were experiencing terrible hardships and sufferings. Let me let her tell you what happened. 2 days after the Japanese retreated for the second time, a crowd of Chinese women trooped into my battered courtyard. They were bewildered, weary of war, and unhappy. And I seized the opportunity of telling them that the great God I served cared for them and could give them peace of heart, even in these awful circumstances. I stood in the middle of the courtyard and held up a large Bible picture. I looked around on them all, my heart full of pity for them, because they did not know God's love. Unknown to her at the time was a hardened general who stood at the back of the crowd and listened. Over the next days, he came to taste of that love and went back to his troops and told them, "Up to this time, we have been a bandit troop. I have led you into a phrase largely for the sake of killing and looting, and we have always been successful. Now we will cease to be bandits and become honorable soldiers, because last night I took Jesus Christ as my God. I find that this book," waving Gladys's Bible, "is against dishonesty and wickedness. Now will every man who is willing to join me come out and promise that we will cease to kill or loot for gain, but we will serve the true God." But he waited in vain for the men to come and promise their allegiance. Instead, he was arrested by his own men. They took away his clothes, tied him on a mule, and went off during the night. For many months, they continued as bandits, looting and rioting. They dragged their general with them everywhere, afraid that he would expose them to the government if they let him go. In every possible way, they tried to break his faith. He was tortured, starved, kicked, and beaten, but still he held out. Fixed in his mind was the knowledge that because he belongs to Jesus Christ, he could no longer be a bandit. After 9 months of this terrible testing, a man came to where he was tied up one night and said, "We did far better when you were our leader. We want you back. Will you lead us again?" "No, because I must still stand for Jesus Christ." "Then if you are really sure, I will help you get away." After 15 months of wandering, he made his way back to Gladys's village, where he entered her courtyard. Instead of a bullying, cursing general, he came as a poor, battered, penniless beggar. She didn't even recognize him. "What's your name?" she asked gently. "No name. I belong to Jesus." He never really grew strong again, and a year after his return, he died. The Christians in the village mourned him with great sorrow, for he had become their big brother. The children of the village adored him and hung around him. He was truly loved. Now let me touch upon another experience. Gladys's work took her to a city where hundreds of university students were converted. But then the Communist Party took complete control of the university and demanded allegiance to the Communist Party, which required an abandonment of their faith. 300 of 500 students gave in. The communist leaders then called the 300 and told them there was work for them to do. They could use what methods they liked, except that of actually taking life, to force those 200 into line. For the next month, the most horrible forms of teasing, petty cruelty, and unpleasant irritations went on. But at the end of that time, there were actually more converts, not less. How had this happened? They began to make urgent inquiries, and they learned that every morning the Christian students had held prayer meetings before class at 7 a.m. to gain strength for the day of testing they knew lay before them. When that study was broken up, the students gathered at 6 a.m. When their opponents discovered them, they rose earlier and met at 5 a.m. So it went on until by the end of the month, some of the Christians were getting hardly any sleep at all. The authorities took immediate action. "We'll stop all this congregating together. We'll put an end to all this prayer and Bible reading," they announced. Each Christian was isolated and put under the guard of 10 red-hot communists for 3 months. Their every movement was watched, and night and day they were talked at, jeered at, indoctrinated. At the end of 3 months, they were all forced to appear in the market square. Under a huge squad of communist police, 200 students marched into the square. A man stood with a long list of names. He called out the first. A girl of 17 stepped forward. She was refined and beautiful and had been brought up in one of those lovely courtyards that belonged to the wealthy of Peking before the war. "What position are you standing in now?" bellowed the man. She walked to a little platform. She faltered a little, but then her voice rang out, suddenly clear and strong. "Sir, when I went for my 3 months indoctrination, I thought Jesus Christ was real. I thought the Bible was true. Now I know Jesus Christ is real. I know this book is true." One after the other of those 200 names were called out, and not one faltered. Every one of them was beheaded that very day in the marketplace. Before each execution, the victim was given one last chance to recant, but even those at the end who had been forced to watch the terrible butchery of all the others did not flinch. Wow. Is this the faith you want your children to have? I believe faith is faltering in our young people because we are not following the pattern for learning. We think to reach them by hammering them with doctrine and commandments to follow. But the first commandment is not to obey. The first commandment is to love. The faith of these examples was strong because they first knew and loved this Jesus Christ whom they chose to follow. They felt like they belonged to him. Following his commandments becomes easy once you feel like you belong to him. They become the expression of our love. But they are not the way to love. Remember, the Pharisees strove for exactness in the keeping of all the laws and statutes of their religion, but their hearts were hard. When doctrines and commandments become the foundation, the two prone-to-err reasoning faculties begin to pick them apart in analysis. But when love is the foundation, When the heart is connected to Jesus Christ, all else follows in power and in strength. I have recommended it before, but I will recommend it again. There is an out-of-print book called Christ and the Fine Arts by Cynthia Maus, M-A-U-S. There are usually used copies online. In her introduction is written, "It is the conviction of the compiler of this anthology that if the youth of today, or for that matter of any day, are to get a clear vision and grasp of the contribution which Jesus Christ has made and is making through the centuries to the development and enrichment of human life, that vision and grasp will be better attained by looking at Christ through the eyes of the artist than in any other way. There is in every heart a love of the beautiful. We are made so that we respond to the ideal and the infinite, even though we cannot and do not fully comprehend either. Through the ages, men's intellects have been unable to agree about what and who Christ is. But human hearts in every generation have united in love for this matchless personality. This anthology, therefore, is dedicated to youth and lovers of youth who, through the fine arts, wish to see, to feel, and to discover with the eyes of the Spirit the Christ of the centuries, the friend, the comrade, the consoler of men through the ages. More poems have been written, more stories told, more pictures painted, and more songs sung about Christ than any other person in human history, because through such avenues as these, the deepest appreciation of the human heart can be more adequately expressed. The purpose of the fine arts is to help us to see, to feel, and to appreciate the world in which we live. In the landscape, the sea, the sky, the human soul, and many another source, the fine arts discover and picture for those of us who would otherwise be inarticulate the love, the light, the beauty of Jesus Christ. Art does not deal with things as they are in themselves. Science does that. Art, particularly religious art, deals exclusively with things as they affect the human soul. And that's where we want to focus our attention. So what is my recommendation for building faith in our children? It is to do exactly what we are learning here at the Well-Educated Heart, to become proficient in the languages of the heart and soul, music, art, poetry, and story, so that we may connect to our Lord in the deepest places of our hearts. Inspired men and women have revealed Him in hymns, in masterful musical compositions, in fine art, in poetry, in beautiful literature. I would not only spend time with these creations, but with the great souls themselves who created them. Furthermore, I would fill my children's hearts with stories of humanitarians and missionaries like Gladys Alward, who have changed lives for the better through Christ's love, in spite of personal suffering and sacrifice. I've provided you with an ample supply of such stories in the library. And nowhere can we feel closer to our Creator than among His creations. This simple act of nature journaling we have been talking about gives us eyes to see the miracles and beauties all around us and to fill our hearts with gratitude. Yes, do read from the scriptures, but let the music of those inspired words flow through the heart of someone who loves Him, not as a duty and a daily responsibility, something to check off the list. Let hymns not be confined to Sunday worship service, but made a part of our everyday lives. Never allow the beat of religious observance to drown out the melody of love. I first heard the stories of Jesus as a toddler, and I loved Him instantly. I think little children have come so soon from His presence that they have not yet forgotten Him. As a three-year-old, this story of the gentle carpenter hanging on a cross bound my heart to His in a way that has never left me. Heaven, with all its beautiful flowers, has lived in my imagination my whole life as a real place, my real home. The lessons of church have often, as they did Gladys, irritated me because they are devoid of that love and beauty. yet I'm still grateful for the fellowship the church offers me. The secret of my faith is that I belong to Jesus Christ. So let me close with something I ran across last night. I was looking for some family games to play at our family reunion next week, and the thought popped into my head to check out an old family recreation text I haven't looked at since my college years over 40 years ago. I didn't even find a game idea, but I came across this little piece that apparently appeared in the Deseret News many years ago and fits in perfectly with this message that has been acting on my heart the last few days. It's called A Parable by Jean Betzner. I took a little child's hand in mine. He and I were to walk together for a while. I was to lead him to the Father. It was a task that overcame me, so awful was the responsibility. And so I talked to the child of the Father. I painted the sternness of his face, were the child to do something that would incur the Father's wrath. He walked under the tall trees, and I said that the Father had power to send them crashing to the ground, struck by his thunderbolts. We walked in the sunshine. I told him of the greatness of the Father, who made the burning, blazing sun. And one twilight, we met the Father. The child hid behind me. He was afraid. He would not take the Father's hand. I was between the child and the Father, and I wondered. I had been so conscientious, so serious. I took a little child's hand in mine. I was to lead him to the Father. I felt burdened with the many things I had to teach him. We did not ramble. We hastened from one spot to another spot. We compared the leaves of the different trees. While the child was questioning me about it, I hurried him away to chase a butterfly. Did he chance to fall asleep, I awakened him, lest he should miss something I wanted him to see. I poured into his ears all the stories he ought to know, but we were interrupted often by the wind blowing, of which we must study, by the gurgling brook, which we must trace to its source. And then, in the twilight, we met the Father. The child merely glanced at him, and then his gaze wandered in a dozen directions. The Father stretched out his hand. The child was not interested enough to take it. Feverish spots burned in his cheeks. He dropped exhausted to the ground and fell asleep. Again, I was between the child and the Father. I wondered. I had taught him so many things. I took a little child's hand in mine to lead him to the Father. My heart was full of gratitude for the glad privilege. We walked slowly. I united my steps with the short steps of the child. We spoke of the things the child noticed. Sometimes we picked the Father's flowers and stroked their soft petals and loved their bright colors. Sometimes it was one of the Father's birds. We saw the eggs that were laid. We wondered, elated at the care it gave its young. Often we told stories of the Father. I told them to the child, and the child told them again to me. We told them, the child and I, over and over again. Sometimes we stopped to rest, leaning against one of the Father's trees, and letting his cool air soothe our brow, and never speaking. And then, in the twilight, we met the Father. The child's eyes shone. He looked lovingly, trustingly, eagerly up into the Father's face. He put his hand into the Father's hand. I was, for the moment, forgotten. I was content.